that's true. Is that right? She sipping one wet and yeah, I swear it get her wetter. My Louboutin's new, so my bottoms they is redder. No, I'm not a rat, but I'm all up on my cheddar. Just talk to your homie, she said we should be together. Gabby Brand was so insane that I made her my header. If she ever call my phone, you know I got a debtor. But I like that girl too much, I wish I never met her.
I was listening to the song. What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 105 of The Locker Room. We got a great episode today with Jared Kleinstein, hilarious guy. He's the co-founder of Gondola and Fresh Tape Media. Also spent some time at Vine, and for the New Yorkers, he worked at Street Easy for a very long time. So a lot of cool insight from him just about sports, about New York City, and pretty much just everything. You guys are really going to enjoy that. But right now, I'm joined with Brett Hamfling and Justin Kaplemaster. I think Maxie might pop in a little bit in over here. He's doing his laundry right now, so I'll probably hear from him soon. But it is conference championship week for college basketball. A lot of fun. Big game coming up today as you're listening. Duke-Syracuse on at noon, I think. I'll be watching that during work. But, you know, I know, Brett, you're probably big into the college basketball stuff.
I don't want to get into, like, individual stuff. It's actually the least college basketball I've watched in years, just because I watch a lot of NBA and just a lot of life going on. But that being said, I just love this time of year, March. You know, March Madness is just one of the best sporting events year round. And, you know, it goes beyond people who like college basketball. It's, you know, you have these Cinderellas and the brackets are built in fun and there's a lot of money being thrown around. So I'm excited to dive in, figure out, you know, who the teams are this year. I know a little bit, but I can't wait. Cappy, I know basketball's not your favorite. Do you like March Madness?
Oh my God, dude. That's like, I feel like I'm your typical person who always says like, oh, you know, I don't watch basketball, but I'm obsessed with March Madness. Like, I feel like that's kind of me. I feel like my dad, like, always, like, oh, he always, like, loved college basketball. Honestly, I'm not going to be like, that's why I like it. But, man, it's so entertaining. You can even see, like, that video, like, Big Cat posted with, like, Chattanooga, that buzzer beater that they had. Yeah. You can see, like, all the hype. Like, oh, it's coming, baby. It's coming. You know what I mean?
I actually am experiencing my first ever college basketball March Madness with a job. So I don't know what that's like on a work day. You know, I've never had to work during that first Thursday, Friday of March Madness. Like every year I was always, you know, in school, like high school, obviously. And then in college, our season was usually over. So I just like literally be drinking all day and eating wings and stuff, like hanging out.
So that's a good point. So I've been in real estate most of my career, and in the beginning, it was sort of like watch on your phone at your desk. Uh-huh. But then it kind of evolved to like long lunch, you know, 2 hours.
Minimal work.
And then I feel like one year I just like took off. I went to Chicago. It was also St. Patty's Day. And one of my good buddies was living there. So you sort of figure it out. I mean, you're also working from home.
Like, that's true.
It's a different animal than being in a cubicle.
No, but I feel like everyone in the company or in the office, like wherever you work, no matter what you do, almost everyone's attention is on that first day of March Madness. So I feel like if you're just trying to get work done, like there should be some kind of mutual understanding, like, hey, like I'm paying attention, but I'm not paying attention.
Yeah. That's funny. We all had like our aha moment of like, oh, now we actually like to watch college basketball. I feel like, mine was like, my brother went to Florida Gulf Coast University.
So oh, well, Doug, yeah.
Yeah. Dog City. So like when that happened, it was like, all right, I'm obsessed. Like it's over.
We were the ones who ended that Cinderella story, Florida. Dog City won like 2 or 3 good games. We just had to crush them.
But it was like fine. It was like they already brought the hype, dude. I read something like the following year, like the amount of students that enrolled at Florida Gulf Coast after that, like just after that game was like through the roof.
I'm sure.
That's so funny. And that's also like the Duke effect, which is really funny. Like when I was younger or people younger, like Duke is this great college basketball program. So you want to go there, but you know, it matters a little once you get there, but like, so people enroll to Florida Gulf Coast and then what? Then they have a shitty team the next year and they're just,
yeah, exactly.
Then they're just stuck on the beach having the best fucking time.
No,
yeah.
But that was the case before. But yeah, I guess it got them on the map and people are like, oh, let me check out this school.
I guess there are a lot of people, like I never really grew up in like a family that was passionate about a college. So I don't really understand what it's like to have like a loyalty to a certain school. And I kind of wish that I cared about like a specific college. Cause I really don't like even my old schools, like, you know, UMass and Mercer, like, sure. Like I'll root for the hockey teams, but like, there's nothing fucking else to root for really. I mean, UMass women's basketball won their conference. That's cool. But,
bro, you're preaching to the choir right now. I'm like the same way, dude. I went to Ferris State. which had a D3 like football team, which was nasty. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. They won like every year. Uh-huh. But I also got the fuck out of Ferris, so I don't root for them anymore. Then Robert Morris hockey program canceled. So I'm like, I don't have an alumni school to like even root for anymore. I'm in shambles.
I actually saw this on Twitter the other day. I forgot who tweeted it. I feel like I always forget who tweets things when I want to reference them. But someone said, I find it very odd when people root die hard for a college that they didn't go to or have any ties to.
There's your explanation right there. Yeah.
Who does that?
I'm sure. I mean, I know plenty of people. I feel like that. Honestly, I think Maxie, who's not even here, Maxie's a huge Duke fan. And I don't know if he's any.
I think Duke is the one exception. I do think that is weird. I agree. Yeah.
I'm one of them. I'm one of them, but I'm only.
Oh, here he is.
There he is.
Max, perfect timing. Can you hear us?
That is kind of good timing. That is great timing.
Perfect timing. Wait, so we're in the middle of recording. Maxie literally just hopped in. Perfect timing. We're talking about how it's weird when people root for a school, like a diehard fan they have no affiliation with. And
oh, great. So there you go. I'm a big, big Duke fan. Zero affiliation. My parents basically refused to let me apply there, ED. But before I do that, Cappy, I haven't seen you in a while. I love you. I miss you.
Hey, bud. I'm good, dude. It's good to see your face. It has been a while. Yeah, it's so funny. You really popped in at the perfect timing.
I mean,
I was gonna say too, not as like the same as Max, but like I root for Florida State, thankfully, because Court and her like her parents are huge alumni there. So like,
okay,
I'll root for Florida State. Yes. Like, so you give me the benefit of the doubt on that, but like, man, that's, I got
I feel like somewhat of an affiliation.
Yeah, that's an affiliation.
Yeah, it's affiliation.
Me, years old, and I saw the Miracle Minute in Maryland when Jay Williams went nuts and was like, "All right, I love this fucking team."
crazy shit in sports though. Besides NCAA coming up, obviously I feel like these trades have been nuts this year in the NFL right now. Like, what's been going on? Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, the NFL's really grabbed some spotlight. You know, usually after the Super Bowl, it's pretty quiet. Free agency hasn't even started yet. But yeah, obviously we have Aaron Rodgers going back to Green Bay and Russell Wilson traded to Denver, kind of out of the blue. I didn't really see that coming. People were talking about Rodgers to Denver. And then you get hit with a Shefty bomb in the middle of your workday. It's like 2 firsts, 2 seconds. It's a massive trade. And
I was going to say, like, I mean, you guys got to agree. Like, I mean, Seattle stole that deal. You know, they were just like, we can't say no to this. Like, there's no way. The amount of pieces they got, like, it's just, yeah, I felt like that was a little.
It's a lot. I mean, I thought we saw it last season. You go all in if you think you're one piece away, like what the Rams thought they were, where they traded Goff and they got Stafford. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Broncos got to go win a ship. If they don't win a ship, then terrible trade.
You think that they're like.
If they do, yeah, of course, it's worth it. Just like
It's a pretty similar trade. I just think the Rams definitely were in a better place. And the Rams even went further when they got Odell back and they got Von Miller. They were like all in. I don't think Denver's quite in that spot, but it really is the good comparison.
The Rams won the Super Bowl 2 or 3 years ago.
What?
They did not.
Oh, we're in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they were. they lost to the Patriots.
Yeah, they were in it.
They lost.
Yeah.
They were in it.
Yeah.
Okay, did they win?
No, but the Broncos haven't been to the Super Bowl since like fucking Peyton Manning.
Okay. That's not that long ago, actually.
It's like at least that was when I was in high school.
When was the last time the Jets been in the Super Bowl?
Are we talking about the Jets winning a Super Bowl next year after a trade?
I mean, I don't know.
You guys compared the Broncos trade to the Rams thing.
In the all-in aspect, not to say of like where they – of like, oh, I guess the time span of the last time they were in the Super Bowl.
You literally just said if they don't win the Super Bowl, it's a bad trade.
Yes, I still stand by that.
Yeah.
Because they're all in.
That's why they did it. Russell
all your picks if you don't think you're all in.
Let's give them the benefit of the doubt, though. Like, Russell Wilson's still unbelievable. He's coming off that injury, which is a little sketchy to make that kind of deal. But, like, I wouldn't be surprised if they do extremely well. I just don't think with the amount of talent that is in this league right now that the Broncos are going to compete for the Super Bowl this next coming year. But you never know. I didn't think that about the – nobody thought that about the Bengals. Look at what the Bengals did this year, you know? Like, you just never know at this point.
Let me just say something about Russell Wilson's injury. I had the same exact injury. It's called the mallet finger injury, where basically the tip of your finger, like, tears off the tendon.
Ew.
I was only out for like 6 weeks. And
what, gym class?
I was about to say, did you get an A in gym?
Yeah.
Of wiping my butt with my right hand. I came back. I was good. Am I tougher than a football player? Maybe. I'm just saying. Russ came back. He was struggling. I just want to put that in the radio waves.
I can't compare.
No, because you're not tough. Hockey players aren't tough.
Yeah. Well, I've just never been injured in my life because I'm not a bitch.
Because you're scared of contact.
No, that's not true. I had like two separated shoulders, mono, like all in the same year. Missed like the entire season.
So Deaver said this to me.
Oh God.
Deaver said, if Laz was mean on the rink,
yeah,
he would have been he would have been sick.
Yeah, I still think I was pretty good, but my parents didn't raise me to be a tough guy. That's for sure.
I was just throwing that out there without seeing a single second of your tape, but I'm happy I kind of nailed that.
No, it's okay. It's very accurate. My coach used to call me Nice Laz. He always told me to play angry, and I never did. So,
gotta get angry. Yeah. Gotta get mean.
It is what it is, I guess. But while we're all here, I know it might actually be kind of like over talked about now, but I feel like we can all talk about the Calvin Ridley situation. I know we all kind of have different opinions. Who wants to lead this one off?
I'm just upset at Calvin. Like he ruined. I'm going to say he ruined my whole fantasy league last year.
It's always fantasy with you.
Yeah, it's always fantasy with Kathy.
I'm not going to say he ruined my whole fantasy league because fantasy football was in shambles last year to begin with all the goddamn injuries and whatever. But, man, I don't know how to feel about this. I think the funniest thing about this story is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he was betting on the Atlanta Falcons, who are such a bad football team. So he was just handing money to FanDuel regardless, which I think is hilarious.
I also agree that it's pretty funny that he would bet on the Falcons and like put that much at stake.
Yeah.
My biggest thing is he knew the potential consequences when he placed the bet. So it's totally on him. Do I agree with the length of the suspension? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Considering that one, you got to think about domestic violence. Like obviously that's dealt in a different matter. Cause it's not like, I don't know if like the league can like, really,
yeah.
Right. It's legally. And yeah. If, like, you're not like convicted, but my biggest thing is if you're convicted of like domestic violence, if you get a year suspension for like gambling, you should be banned from the league for life. For like domestic violence.
Yeah.
But, like, it's just like, I don't know the punishment.
Yeah.
It's got to fit the crime.
I mean, these two things are true. One, the punishment shouldn't be as long as it is. But two, it's in the rule book or whatever, in the guidelines that it is that long. So I think, and that's honestly what most people feel. Like, you know,
was that written? It was written that it was a year suspension?
I'm sure it's somewhere.
You got to clamp it down. It's like saving face and the integrity of the league. Like, I get it. The suspension just don't make any sense. Like Brady, I mean, I hate Brady, but like he got 4 years for like
the four games.
I wish he got 4 years. What did I
say? You said 4 years.
4 years.
Four games.
Where did those Super Bowls go?
4 years. Oh, yeah. He got 4 games for like deflating balls, of which the offense brings their own balls, special teams bring their own balls. Like, I don't know. Doesn't make any sense. I'll stop.
For me, it's just like, you know, obviously he broke an obvious rule, whatever. But I think, like, you know, 3 years from now, there's going to be NFL players that are partnered with sports books that are promoting gambling and all this stuff. And we're going to be talking about this incident probably, you know, in the future. And they're going to say the punishment was too much, blah, blah, blah. I think that's what's going to happen. I mean, we're already seeing it happen now. Like, I talked about it on my Ranger podcast, but Connor McDavid partnered with BetMGM. And, like, if you're going to have professional athletes promoting gambling, and then you don't expect them to bet when they're not affiliated with their team. Like, the fact that he wasn't affiliated, like, on the sideline doesn't necessarily make it okay, but I think it makes it less harmful and less impactful. I mean, like, he literally had no outcome on the game at all. But then again, it's a clear written rule. He broke the rule. He should be punished. I just don't know if he should be punished as harshly as he was. But also, you know, on that same note, it is such a weird time to like navigate the separation between sports betting just with like everything, because it's promoted everywhere and now it's become so acceptable that like there's obviously other players in the NFL that are betting. There is. I mean, are they dumb enough to get caught? Are they dumb enough to get caught? Probably not. I think that's a problem that he had too. Like, dude, you can bet all you want. Just don't get caught. Like, do it through a friend. Like, why are you?
Wasn't his name on FanDuel like I am Calvin Ridley?
Was it?
That was a troll. It was a good joke.
I mean, like,
I am Calvin Ridley from the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah. Well, how dumb can you be though? Like, seriously, there's a written rule. Like, how you like that's just a stupid thing to do. But
then, it's also just not worth it. He had a $10 million contract next year. Like, even if he was betting, you know, $100,000 on a game. No, I was saying the opposite.
Yeah.
Even if he was like trying to really make money, Like, he wasn't trying to make money, and then it's not like the whole thing. It's frustrating. Yeah. I feel bad for him, but he's also dumb at the same time.
I mean, people have jobs, like people like us have jobs where we have to go. We have to go through a bunch of like loops in order to invest in the stock market. Like he has a job that pays very, very well. And the one thing that he can't do, or there are very few things that he can't do.
A lot of things.
A lot of things that he can't do. And one of them is he can't bet on sports.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Suck it up.
Yeah. No, I just, I find it like super interesting just because I know we're so young in this right now where sports betting is like literally so popular now. I'm excited to hear the conversations 3 years from now. I really am. Like, I know it's going to be like an old takes exposed on Twitter. Like, that guy's going to have a field day with this whole situation.
I mean, a lot of famous sports athletes have problems with gambling. It's just how you go about it, you know? I just, like, recently rewatched the Michael Jordan documentary.
Yeah.
Crazy to hear about his whole gambling problem and shit like that. But, Laz, obviously I know this isn't the Rangers podcast, but a little hockey real quick. There's how much accuracy is it to that Panarin-Kane thing?
Not much at all.
Okay.
It's just like, it's kind of just like a rumor that has a possibility. And that's something too, that's kind of funny with all the NFL trades that happened in the off season. Like the NHL trade deadline's like in like 10 to 12 days, I think. And there's not going to be nearly the amount of buzz that there was like in the NFL off season, like, or not even like the off season. It's like No, but I'm saying like, it's a trade deadline and like, there are some big names available and like NFL just ruined it for us.
Yeah. There'll be one or two.
Yeah, that's it. But on that note, I think we should send it over to Jared Kleinstein. You guys are really going to enjoy this. This guy was born in Toronto, Ontario, but grew up in Denver, Colorado. He has done some incredible work in the sports media world, and he seems to know everyone there is in sports. So we're really happy he's here. He's the founder of Fresh Tape Media and Gondola. We're really pumped to have him. Welcome to the show, Jared Kleinstein or Kleinstein. We still don't really know how to pronounce it. I don't think he does either, but we're really happy you're here.
Absolutely no idea. If my family had made a decision over the last 80 years in North America, we would have told you, but Kleinstein, they both work.
Well, I want to give a shout out to the person that connected us. And it seems like, you know, a lot of guests that we've had in our show, but I want to give a shout out to Brendan Kaminsky. And you know, when we first talked, you dropped like, you know, four or five names that we've had on here. So you got a name drop and you got to hype us up a little bit, 'cause we're recording here and we need to like all the hype we can get.
Oh, well, I mean, realistically, I only got where I am in life because of Jewish geography. I've actually never applied for a job and got it off an application. It was mainly just like somebody knew somebody's mom who got somebody connected to somebody. And that's like, I'm not even being facetious. I can name every job I've ever had and how it was through some family or friend connection. So if this means that this is the start of promoting the locker room and I can get you guys up to the top of the charts, I'll do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, well, you know, the Jewish geography world, you know, gets shrunk, and then the sports content world is shrunk. So, you know, when you double dip in that, I'm hoping we could get to the front of your Rolodex by the end of this interview, but you know, we'll see if we earn it.
The goal is to be at enough tentpole events together that whenever our team goes to Benihana, there's like a seat at the Benihana table for the locker room squad, no matter what.
That'd be a lot of fun. I went to Hibachi last week.
I know. And you were complaining about, actually it was a good point. So Johnny,
it was a good tweet.
About the heart fried rice. It's not that complicated. Do you know that, Jared? They just basically make the fried rice into a heart.
Oh, yeah. And then they go
every time.
Made it pulse. It's really not that difficult.
It's really not. We did pizza the other night, like in the mountains, like with a group of friends. We made personal pizzas and then we shaped it as a pizza. But we didn't do the heartbeat. But like, really, it's not like the shrimp in the hat, the volcano, that stuff's tough, but I know the heartbeat is like
so during COVID, one of my buddies, and he always likes to do Benihana every year, but it was close. So he had us over to his place in his backyard and he got like a Benihana chef for hire, and we basically had him for the 2 hours. So we were doing the flips, we were doing the choo-choo trains ourselves. So I got the real taste of what it's like, and the hat thing is tough, the heart not as tough.
So I have to tell you guys a story that's very on brand for this group. So when I lived in New York out of college, I like knew that I was making like 40K a year. I worked at Street Easy, which now is a much bigger product. Back then I was like the first intern and one of seven of us on the team. And I was like trying to think of ways that I could make money on the side. So I wrote down, like, I literally just found this next to me. I always have it. It's like my notepad of side job ideas. Like, I'm going to do some SAT tutoring. I'm going to sell frozen bananas on the street, like all these ideas. But one of the ideas was to make a restaurant called, I had two names for kosher hibachi. One was Ben and Hannah's. I thought that would have crushed. And or hibachi. I like both were perfect. The issue is that like all the best hibachi foods are definitively not kosher. So
yeah, I was gonna say the tougher part is the execution of
product.
Yeah, like you're not using real butter in anything. It would kind of sabotage the whole operation. But
I don't know if gefilte fish tastes so good off the hibachi grill.
Gefilte fish fried rice, no interest.
No, definitely not. I actually wanted to ask you about working for Street Easy though. You know, we kind of touched on it a little bit about just like, it seems to be the hub for New York City apartments. And, you know, I've been in the apartment. Yeah. I've been on the apartment search for a couple months now and haven't had any luck. I know I kind of asked you for like a, you know, a backdoor, you know, some kind of apartment hookup you can't provide me though. But, I guess for you, just like someone who's not really a New Yorker, but got that New York experience. And, you know, like you said, you had your foot in the door at a company now that's grown a ton. You know, I don't really know exactly where I'm getting.
I seen that the plane wasn't happening. So the job was in New York.
Yeah. So, I mean, my career development was like in college. So in college, I was like marketing entrepreneurship major and a film minor. And I had a sports TV show. So like the obvious connection is like, well, I'll be in sports media or something like that. Mm-hmm. But instead I worked at Street Easy, mainly because I had a girlfriend in New York and I wanted to live in the city. Mm. All my friends were getting internships in the city and I would have done, like I was ready to do Cutco knives. I would have done anything to live in the city. Like somebody who used to work in Denver with my mom's company who knew somebody was running their biz dev at the time. And her name was Dawn Doherty. And it was one of those things where the interview was 15 minutes and she's like, yep, sounds good. You'll come out here and you'll work, you know, $15 an hour. Just don't dress too fancy to come in the office and see you in a couple months. And I was like, wait, what? How did I do this? So I, instead of going into that traditional like sports film, whatever world that I thought I'd be in, I worked at Street Easy for that was sophomore year of college. So through junior year, senior year, and then, six years after that. And it was the best. And my dad was a real estate developer. My mom's a broker. Real estate's kind of in our family. My brother builds custom homes. So it's kind of inevitable that I would do the tech thing. But I learned a lot. And the funniest thing is everybody's like, do you have hookups with real estate? Like to get a good apartment? And I was like, no, I just know how bad the apartments can be. I know about the breadth and depth of bad apartments. So
you know, if they don't show photos or a floor plan and it sounds incredible, it's really not.
Yeah, I know every trick the brokers have in the world to find a way to finagle the deal that they need. But I also ran broker relationships. So, like my job was to be from the beginning, I was in charge of SEO and I asked what SEO was and they said, Google it. And then they laughed because I think they were like, wait, we're going to make him Google search engine optimization. By the end of my time at Street Easy, I was running all of our partnerships and relationships to the real estate community, and it was a blast.
So you did Street Easy for 5 or 6 years, and then what? You realized like you really want to get back to sports and content, and kind of what transition did you make?
Not at all. I got completely lucky. And when you hear the story, you're going to be like, this is not how real jobs are got in the world. But Street Easy had been acquired in 2013 while I was on a sabbatical. I had to fly back for the acquisition and like the stock market ringing the bell, the NASDAQ. And after a year of being owned by Zillow, I was kind of ready to start doing something else. And I got an email from a friend of my sister's and it said, let's talk about Vine. He was at Vine at the time. I thought he was really excited about my like career trajectory and really wanted me on the team. It turns out my sister was in his apartment and said to him, you should help my brother. So I talked to the team, and this is why, like, I feel really guilty about a little bit of my career development. One little backtrack: in 2011, while I was at Street Easy, I drunkenly made up the T-Bowing meme, but that's
neither. We're going to get to that.
You made that up?
But yeah.
All right, we'll get to it.
We'll get to that.
Let's save that.
But essentially, I interviewed for Vine for a content partnerships role, and they said to me, if you could focus on anything, what would you like to focus on? Like any vertical. And I said, sports? And they said, oh, perfect. The person who does that right now doesn't really like sports, so you can do it. So the head of sports, the head of sports job at Vine, like every mid-20s sports obsessed human being in the world's dream job, I got because the person in charge of it didn't really like sports. So that's like if fun. They had posted it as a head of sports job, I never would have got it. In a million years they would have had people from ESPN from all over, but instead they got me, like a guy from a real estate background.
Go ahead, John.
I don't remember Vine that much. I was on it briefly, but sports teams and stuff didn't really have Vine accounts like they have TikTok now, right?
They didn't at first. It was, the origin of Vine is, it was, similar to TikTok in that the creator community really drove it early on, comedy, that kind of stuff. And then something happened where the UGC component of it, people being able to capture content on the sidelines, made for these viral clips from games where you could see, a three-pointer that of Dame, there's one Dame Lillard three that went super viral as a Vine. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm seeing this angle. So the leagues had two options. They could either go DMCA takedown and be really mad at people for publishing the content, or they could kind of start embracing it. And this is early days. Twitter didn't have video in their system yet. So if they wanted highlights, if the league realized, okay, people are ripping highlights, people are publishing behind the scenes stuff, we might as well do it. So they started trying to instead of beat them, join them. And the leagues all started using Vine, and it got to the point where the NBA was by far the biggest, and they were the first brand in the world to have a billion loops on Vine. And by the end of Vine, when comedy and other things were kind of dwindling and Instagram had really taken the lead, this is when Musical.ly was a thing, not TikTok yet. But when Instagram took over, one of the verticals that really was still blowing up was sports, because all the leagues had at that point started really adopting it.
Yeah, it's funny. Johnny, you're definitely too young. I don't even remember. And three or four years older than Johnny. I don't even remember Vine too well. I remember the comedy aspect to it. I would have said sports teams weren't on it. I would have said it was more for these quick, cuts and comedy type of thing. But so you saw Vine grow. How long were you there?
From 2014 till the end of 2016 when they shut it down. Tough moment, but it's also fun getting laid off with all your friends. It's not I had even if I deserved to be laid off or anything, I would never know, because all of us got laid off at the same moment. So
I think I made one Vine video, and it was me trying on my sister's clothes, and I got made fun of a lot.
I'm gonna find that. I will surface that Vine.
But yeah, I kind of want to get your perspective. Oh, sorry. What are you saying?
He has all the all this the storage on the back servers. He could pull anything up, it sounds like. Which
I would love to see.
Not true. But we'll pretend.
But Jared, I'm just curious to ask you, obviously, because you were at a company that's the exact same thing as TikTok is pretty much right now. What makes TikTok different? Why will TikTok survive, or do you think it won't?
I like to say Vine walked so TikTok could run. Uh-huh. And that's not the most original sentence, but I firmly believe it for the following reasons. We realized 2014, 2015, how big of a component music was going to be to the content on Vine. One of the most popular comments on Vine was song ? Because we didn't have the same credit functionality that TikTok has to see who the singer is. So everybody would just say song. That was the most popular thing people would say on the platform. So we knew music was big. We started building music features so that people could add music in the app. But the one thing that we didn't have that TikTok did was oodles and oodles of money to go get music rights. And TikTok getting music rights early on and being able to use popular music without DMCA takedowns for every time. Like we would have moments where like a Taylor Swift song would get used on a Vine. She would tweet about it because she was so stoked about the content. And then her publisher would request a takedown of the content because that's just how the market works. But we knew that music was big. We also were building long form by the end because we knew that 6 seconds wasn't enough. So we had longer content. The writing was on the wall for TikTok to do exactly what it did. The tough thing is, though, if you ask Twitter, would they invest the amount that TikTok did in machine learning and understanding users and all the stuff to make your For You page so wonderful? Like, I don't know how deep in TikTok y'all are, but like,
I'm not
For You. The For You page of TikTok is extraordinary. Like they know what we want better than we know what we want. And that's like what, like Vine, we tried to give targeted things based on you what you liked, but it never could have gotten to the same level of extraordinary detail that TikTok does.
Yeah. When I was first starting out with TikTok and, you know, people were like, you know, they have all your information. They know everything you want. I was like, good. I want to have my feed curated to what it is and not waste my time. And, you know, I would say Vine crawled so TikTok could run. I think it's in the realm. But the user generated content is just such a beast that instead of, you know, Instagram is really, it's your community and some celebrities that you chose to follow a couple of years ago. So you're not seeing the best of what's going on. You're just, you know, now, honestly, they're changing it because of TikTok. They're doing, you know, bait because you follow so-and-so, here's this. But you know, TikTok, you're getting the best of every type of thing all around the world. It's this user-generated content is just such a beast in putting out good stuff. And yeah, I think I'm on TikTok a lot.
a lot.
At first, it was, you know, I was a passive watcher and people were like, you're on it. I'm like, yeah, I just watch. And I was like, yeah, I just post a couple times. And now I'm trying to post like every day, which I don't because it's tough. But I'm a huge believer in TikTok.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing about the platform, by choice or by design. If you think about Instagram, when you go on Instagram, more often than not, you get FOMO. And that's not a bad thing necessarily, but like I remember being in Peru a few years ago with some friends and seeing that on Instagram that a friend was at like a concert for a band I liked. And I was like, ah, damn, wish I was there. And I was like, what are you doing? You're in Peru, dude. Yeah. Like live life. But Instagram creates FOMO. Twitter is information. So like, it's where I feel like I pick up my everything, including like, you know, impending nuclear war and all the doomsday things that I, that my friends and I tweet. And then Facebook is all my friends' birthdays and, you know, finding out, who is like doing like who's over 60 and doing something really funny, like posting on their own wall for other people's birthdays. And stuff like that. But TikTok is genuine joy. Like I opened that app to feel better. And I like, you're right. Like take all my personal data. As long as when I open that app, I smile. So
yeah,
I'm all on board.
The other thing I would just say about Twitter, I personally think Twitter still has a better comment section because you could do videos and pictures and people are just really funny. Especially when you have 1,000 people trying to be funny, 90% of them are not going to be, but the 10% that's funny rise to the top. TikTok has a decent comment section, but the fact that you can't do any media, any videos or pictures limits it a little bit. It's not something I've said out loud before, but now I'm thinking about it. You think that's something that they could change or it's just, I guess.
I mean, you and my wife would disagree. You and my wife would disagree fully. My wife thinks that the TikTok comments are double the value of the posts themselves. When I see it, when I open, like we do what most mid-30s couples do with kids, we spend, you know, a few minutes a night looking at each other's likes on TikTok.
Wait, you guys are both on TikTok? You're on TikTok too?
Yeah. I mean, my wife doesn't post actively, but she's a consumer and I had enough old vines to post that I could get a massive following. So somehow I have 50,000 TikTok followers.
Wow. We have a TikTok account. We'll follow you on it right after.
We have 51,000.
See, but you actually, so, but it's, no, it's one of those things like I have 50,000 followers and my videos get 200 views just because like they don't actually like me. They just like the four posts that I put up, like the D'Amelios from 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You pay for them.
My personal account was stuck in a rut for a couple months. I was getting no views, and then I had a lucky video. It's not impressive. Just go super viral, and now my account's just active. So it is a thing. Wait, I'm gonna take a step back with what you just said, and you made me think a little bit. And in regards to the comment sections, I guess the TikTok comment section probably is better because of what I just said. There's so many more like the good posts. There's so many more eyeballs and comments. So you do have that. There's 20,000 comments on a good TikTok. So 8 of them are going to be incredible. That is something that you made me think about.
It's not the same thing, but it's also not the same thing as like on Twitter. I expect to see like LeBron responding and or like some like crazy interaction versus Durant. Like TikTok. I expect like whoever the funniest person with the best social voice happens to have posted a particularly poignant comment, and that's the one that like hits.
No, that's like, true.
Yeah, I also spend as much time as I say I spend on TikTok, I probably spend double on Twitter just because I don't know. That's like where my life is. I feel like.
Well, let's dive into some of the stuff that you've created. I mean, we haven't hit on it yet, but you know, Fresh Tape Media and Gondola are two things that are, you know, kind of like a futuristic way of thinking of absorbing media, I feel like. And you've got to do some really cool stuff with those. Like you did the NFL draft, NHL All-Star, NHL draft. You've done a lot of cool stuff, you know, involving athletes as well. So can you talk about just like where that creative narrative and stuff idea kind of stemmed from? And then, you know, just some of those experiences and your favorite moments that you've had.
For sure. So when I was at Vine, I was the only sports guy, right? So I built all these relationships with all the leagues and teams and broadcasters. And when we shut down, I was trying to figure out what to do. And one of my old Twitter colleagues who's still on the Twitter media team doing like sports partnership contracts and everything, he's just a beast of a human being, said to me, why don't you just keep doing what you're doing now? And I said, I can't, Vine doesn't exist. And he goes, yeah, but all of our people will still work with you. Just see if they'll do it, not just as Vine. So I had no intention of starting my own company. I was like, you know, I didn't mind. Some people like, I'll never work for the man again. Uh-huh. I love the man. The man like had benefits and like great free food at the office.
LaCroix.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in life, there's good food, great food, and free food. So
true.
That's why I really love the Twitter office so much.
We'll clip so, that.
I'm proud of it. I don't think it's very on brand mm-hmm. for me. So I was like, okay, maybe I'd consider that, but I don't want to be a consultant because I think that consulting stresses me out because if you're like not working, then you're not making money and all that stuff. And he was like, then start an agency. I said, I've never worked in an agency. I don't know how to do that. He goes, yeah, figure it out. So for some reason, I listened to him and I started asking people that I'd worked with, would you consider, you know, doing a project with me? And my trick for success is not being good at anything. Because if you're good at something, then people try to hire you for that. As in, if I was a talented editor, people would say, hey, we'd love to hire you for an edit, right? But for me, they expected absolutely nothing of quality or substance. What they got from me was ideas and then the ability to find people to execute them. So when one of the first project was MLS Live, content strategy as they were going live on Facebook, and second was NBA All-Star. And it was just like, we have a space and we need to make content with the shoes, with the player's shoes. What ideas do you have? So I spat out a bunch of bizarre ideas, including one where we would set the player's shoes up in a diorama so that it would look like their shoes are massive shoes inside of a normal size, like New Orleans Jazz Club. And then we'd pan up to show the player's face and realize like, oh my God, it wasn't a giant shoe. It was a normal shoe on a big player. Mm-hmm. And like those kind of things were like, I don't know how to make a diorama anymore. I'm not in fifth grade, nor am I a talented artist. But I do know my friend Lawrence, who's like one of the most freakishly artistic human beings in the world, who now makes stop motion music videos for Lizzo and a bunch of massive names. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Lawrence, do you want to, like, you've done basketball stuff with me before. Do you want to work on NBA All-Star? He's like, sure. And we just had an idea and the NBA took a chance on us for it. And since then, it's just been a series of people saying, we need this. And it's completely, every day is different. Every project is different. What we need what we did for Pro Bowl, for example, building this spikometer, like a carnival game for measuring how strong you spike the ball, compared to what we did for NBA All-Star where we did photography with the players with a ball made of diamonds and rhinestones. I don't know if y'all saw that, like, ball that was all over. It, like, we manufactured those for the league. And by manufacture, I mean, like, covered a very nice Wilson ball with rhinestones. we don't have some factory somewhere.
We took glue.
glue and rhinestones. But a lot of our... You know how many hours it takes for a ball to do glue and rhinestoning? And
I can imagine.
I didn't personally do it, but I oversaw it very litigiously. No, but so anyway, like, it's just been, the process is every client needs different things. And I've just been able to connect the dots and build a team around me of people that are really, really good at making everything from content to fabricating sets to designs and everything in between. So it's a lot of fun.
So what is your focus now? So you have Gondola, you have Fresh Tape.
So Fresh Tape, what has been my entire focus for the last five and a bit years. And in 2018, we finished, I think it was NBA All-Star. And we realized that we wanted to put together a report on how it went for the client, because I came from, like, a, you know, numbers, real estate analytics background. So I thought if we're done with an event, we should send them an analytics report. But they have their own social analytics. There's so many social analytics platforms out there, but those are for, like, the NBA account, right? And our stuff goes out on, like, 80 different posts, right? Like, we come out of NBA All-Star, something goes out on Giannis's account, something goes out on NBA, something goes out on NBA Kick, something goes out on NBA All-Star. And we couldn't track it. We were, like, putting stuff in a Google sheet and hoping that we could, like, copy the amount of views down and hope it wouldn't change too much. So what we did is we said, I had an old Vine engineer who I used to work with. I said, Ralph, can you build, like, a very basic database and scraper so we can plug in the content we make and then it just saves to one place? And he was like, sure. Yeah. So he built it. That's 2018. And then we used that for a bit. And we're like, ooh, can we add, like, the creators who worked on it, so on our team, so that we can look back and know who did it? And then we added the clients and we added tags and we were like, oh, this is great. And we used it as Fresh Tape admin for 2 years. And then we realized, or like at least a year and a half. And then we're like, wait a second. So if you can paste a link from social media and see who made the content, then we've accidentally built IMDb for social, AKA we've built the first social credit system. And we look around and we couldn't find anybody else doing it. And we were just like, well, this is the real deal. So we spent, we rebranded it as from Fresh Tape admin to Gondola, built it for a consumer, for not just one user, but for the world to use. And then we've been, you know, slowly but surely getting it out in the world over the last, like, year or so, and finally came out of, like, our private beta this last month, hired our first head of community, Amy Keene, who's just an extraordinary social voice and advocate for the creatives. And it's been awesome. And we have now this, like, user base full of creators. And like, if you are trying to find an editor in Phoenix, we have them. If you're trying to find videographers in Melbourne, Australia, we have them. And it's all just, like, happening magically. So my split, to answer your question, which was kind of like, what's your focus? I'm probably 60-40 avs. Abs. No, I just got a pop up that just says Abs won, Islanders won. So we're.
Our teams are playing each other.
I just got a pop up right now. I'm 60-40 Gondola Fresh.
So I love the idea of Gondola. So I, you know, have my hand in a bunch of different things in social, and I'm doing video editing for podcasts, and I'm doing, you know, I'm producing podcasts, and I make videos, just like videos to show off. Like, I've made a couple 30 for 30 trailers, and I had it stuff on YouTube and on Twitter. And, you know, I was applying to jobs, and I would apply and I would kind of attach the links in the emails or in the application. But that was when I had, like, a couple nice pieces. And then as I started to grow and have all these things, I was like, these people aren't seeing my work. You know, if they go on my Twitter, they might see some of it. So then I had this whole, like, side quest of trying to build my own website. But I didn't think I had quite enough to make a good website. Like, it would have shown my stuff, but I didn't feel like it was right for website. And then I was thinking of just creating, like, basically I went in this circle of, like, what's the best way to show off my work. And then Johnny told me he connected with you, and I checked out Gonzalez, and I think it's kind of perfect for exactly like what I've been looking for, which is
it's like a job portfolio in a sense, you know,
for sure. And the funny thing about it is, it fill by doing one action, as in adding a piece of content and saying you made it, you have four things happen at the same time. So you add, all you do is say, I made this, right? It populates your portfolio so that now you don't have to go back and like, if you want to show people what you've done, you have the portfolio. It's an organizational tool so that you can find your old work. So like if I say, hey, I want to find our NHL All-Star 2021 content. We did 2020. We didn't do anything for 2021. 2020 NHL All-Star content. It's one click. Analytics, which I would assume, as much as I like, you're a savvy dude, I bet if I told you what's the total, if I asked you what's the total like views on your content, I bet you
have no idea.
Time, right? So there's that. So those three things happen regardless of if there's a community, right? If nobody else used Gondola, you'd have those three things. And then the fourth and probably most important is by tagging yourself as an editor on something. If people are looking for editors, now they can find you. So there's like, we have a creator search on Gondola. So somebody can go in there and say, I want to find editors who've worked on hockey. And your name will show up, right? So I want to find editors that have made content for TikTok, and your name can show up. So this is like a creative tool. And I mean, listen, I, as a person who's, you know, in my mid 30s, I use LinkedIn more than I want to admit. But like all of my LinkedIn profile shows a list of places I've been. And as much as I love repping Street Easy, love repping Twitter Vine, love repping Fresh Tape, it becomes, you know, it's like a CV or a resume. It's just a stack rank of like flexing the biggest brand names of the companies you've worked for. It does not tell anything about the quality of your work.
Well, even me trying to prepare for this interview and trying to get to know you, I went on your LinkedIn quick, which, like you said, has your company. It doesn't show me how many followers you have or any specific pieces of work. I mean, maybe it does in one of the posts. And then I went on your Twitter, and it's a great point. Even for something like this, it's not, there's no easy way to get the totality of someone's career or online career.
So if you look at my Twitter, then you're aware I'm not racist. If you look at my Instagram, if you look at my Instagram, you're aware I have a baby and a dog. And if you look at my Facebook, you're aware my birthday is November 4th and that I haven't used Facebook for like active posting in a long time. So, and my LinkedIn, yeah, your point, it tells you that where I work, but my Gondola page shows what I've produced lately. It shows what I've been creating. And like, I'm not even, and as I said, I'm not an editor. I'm not a videographer, but I still want to show people what kind of things I work on and what kind of things Fresh Tape uses. And again, my favorite thing about it is like, let's just say nobody used Gondola except me. I would still get extraordinary value from it because I can find all my old stuff. So I'm super pumped on it. It's also like as a founder of a company, you're looking for market validation. You're looking for like, will people use this? And the reason I'm most confident is because I used it for like three years now. And I know how valuable it is just because I keep using it. So hopefully this continues to take off. And I've already gotten texts from people saying they got gigs from Gondola. I've had people say from different leagues that they've had applicants send it instead of their portfolio sites. So the momentum's there. We're just having some fun with it.
I was going to say, it could be like considered somewhat of an Uber for, you know, creators, for digital creators. Well, like if you're in need, obviously, Brett, it's not like Uber. You don't like, you know, get a ride. But if you're looking, you know, if you're in, there's so many times and so many people I work with that are like in need of a, you know, videographer for a random shoot, you know, in whatever state. All you got to do is go to Gondola and maybe find some. I don't know if you can search by location.
Yep.
But
I can look for New York videographers right now and it'll pull them up. And, you know, we're going to make that smarter. And one of the things I'm most excited about is on the job posting side of things. Like, imagine if you post a job as the Locker Room's podcast editor, right? And you say in the job application, like, you know, show examples of when you've done social editing for podcasts. And people don't have to like go comb through their mind or anywhere. They'll literally just go into their own Gondola account, look up the content that's there, click like one example, two example, three example. And all of a sudden you're not looking at somebody who says that they're a social podcast editor. You have their actual examples right in front of you. So we're stoked on
it. Makes a lot of sense. All right. We need to go back. We need to talk about tebowing.com. And you threw me for a curveball. I don't know if Johnny said that. Did you invent the Tebow meme, or walk us through this story? Cause I went to the University of Florida, by the way. Tebow.
Oh, hey.
Tebow was there before me. We didn't get any championships when I was there. So Tebow got us two championships, and then Joe Kim Noah and those guys got championships. And then I came and we were good, but we never won, never won anything.
It was a great, that was actually a great, whatever, 5-year period to be a Gators fan. Cause like that Joe Kim Noah, Corey Brewer, Al Horford.
Yeah.
That was a team, and the football teams were great. That was a lot of fun. Although I looked at some stat about like where all the people from that football.
Oh, it's terrible. There's more arrests. There's more jail. There's more people on the football. It wasn't that year, but the Aaron Hernandez year, there's more people on that team in jail than like any other team ever, or something like along those lines.
There's some wild stories there. But no, I was not, I didn't go to a D1 school. I went to Wash U, St. Louis, go Bears. so I had a very different college experience. I actually told somebody recently that I was a part of the NIL problem. I was a part of the problem. My roommates were on the basketball team, and me and my friends sold jerseys with their names on the back for charity. We gave some money to charity because we pocketed most of it, but we didn't give them a penny. They didn't make any money off of the use of their names and likenesses on jerseys. But anyway, so I went to Wash U. A lot of my friends from like Wash U lived in New York, and then I had a good split of friends from Denver, and we would all go to a place called Sidebar that was like the notorious Broncos bar in Union Square. It was on like 15th and
it became a Gators bar. That's really funny.
It was both.
Okay.
It like just happened to be both.
I've been kicked out of there before.
if you, it means you didn't have fun if you didn't get kicked out of there.
Once exactly.
So we used to go there every Sunday to watch Broncos games. I'd wear that jersey. No, I didn't wear that jersey. He was not on the team yet. So we would go to the games. I'd watch the games there. And then the game was like October 23rd, 2011, for being very specific. and it's the 23rd to 24th, and Broncos are playing the Miami Dolphins. It's the like the game where they went on a crazy game-winning field goal, and Tebow, you know, kneels and does a little prayer at the end, right? So we're drunk and we're throwing things up and down. Everybody's wild. We go outside the bar, and I say to my friends, "Hey, let's take a picture doing the Tebow." And they were like, "What's the Tebow?" And I said, you know, the thing he just did, you know, this thing. And they were like, okay. So I showed them what to do. We got on a knee and we took a picture and I put it on Facebook. And it got 9 likes under the caption NYC Jews for Tebow. And because I was in a phase where if I had weird ideas, I just did them. I looked online and saw that tebowing.com was available for $10. And I looked on Twitter and Instagram, and it had never been used as a word. Like, it just wasn't a thing. And this is right when planking was a thing. So bless you.
And Faith Hilling in South Park, right?
Exactly. So that all happened. Like, I think Faith Hilling was in the same episode as the Tebowing.
I think it stemmed from, I think, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So like planking was a thing. So I sent an email to all my friends saying, "Hey guys, I bought," like the next day, because I was still drunk when I bought the URL and set up the website. And I said to my friends, "Hey guys, let's make this the new planking." And one of my friends responded with like, "Yes, the world needs another blog. Fantastic idea." And I came into work at 3DZ on Monday, and I said to my boss, I was like, "I made a new website." He's like, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah, we'll have more views than 3DZ by the end of the week." I was just young and stupid. And he said, "I'll take that bet." And then we did. That was Monday. By Wednesday, I was on CNN and every major network. And
so what was actually on the website? Was it crowdsourced?
People just submitted. It was a Tumblr blog that people could submit pictures of themselves Tebowing. This is like before memes lasted a day. Yeah. This lasted at least 2 months, to the point it kept going.
That's a perfect time of like, that's a perfect moment in time of the internet of like, all that coming together, where you could have this really niche, like website with this thing that's sort of taking over. That's really funny.
And like, that was the time where you could throw, everybody threw spaghetti at the wall, right? Like at one point I made hot dogs or there's somebody made the hot dogs or legs one.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Hot dogs or legs. Like I did sad vacation feet. Like people would, I was just bothered by my friends taking pictures of their feet on vacation, like on beaches. So I'd put beach whales behind them and I'd put like very sad things in the pictures. But like I threw everything at the wall. I had like 40 bad ideas and then T-Bowling just struck a nerve and everybody was obsessed with it for a few months to the point that like we went to games and we had, I mean, I still have T-Bowling t-shirts and hats and everything.
I'm not going to lie, Brett. I feel like I'm talking to you in 5 years. I think you're just like, I think you guys are just like so in tune like to each other.
The one thing is I feel like Jared, when he was younger, had a little more drive than me. I feel like I have the drive now, but like you were on this from the get-go. Like I've only bought, I believe, one URL in my life. It's really embarrassing. The Giants, I don't know if I told, the Giants had two picks in the top five, I think. The Saquon Barkley year. And so I thought they might draft Saquon and Baker Mayfield. So I bought the URL to Sake and Bake, like spelled a couple different ways. I don't know what I thought they could be the new dynamic duo of the NFL. Yeah. I bought it a couple different ways, like with the N or with like the ampersand or whatever. The Giants didn't draft Baker Mayfield, obviously. They got Saquon and never did anything with it. Probably forgot to stop paying for it for a year, probably paid for like an extra year. And that's sort of my foray into buying websites.
Well, I mean, the obvious thing to me that's disappointing is that you didn't get Old Spice to buy that from you and like just have it as like a brand. Because I know I just looked up Saquon's for sure an Old Spice person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Baker at some point, he was just on a Coldest Balls thing that was sponsored by Old Spice. Anyway, I feel like you got to find a mutual brand connect and sell it to them and be like, hey, I've got this idea. It's called Sake and Bake.
It's actually a really good idea.
I think you do it with, and you have like a Ricky Bobby-esque mojo to it. I think it'd be really good. That's why is that a stupid idea? That's brilliant.
I don't know. well, I guess part of the issue is there is all these different ways to spell it. So like, I think I was taking the easy way out. I think I was trying to buy the URL to sell, which I think is partially illegal. I don't know if I was thinking that I'm going to build out the website. I did do like a little bit of the website, like early design, but I don't know if I was going to take it to the next level.
I mean, I'll say this. I think that most people that have bought and sold URLs have done it more for the money than for the intent to build something on it. I used to own Did the Cubs Win Tonight? Because I thought that people would go to a site to find out if the Cubs won.
That was a Twitter page. No?
Well, yeah, it's a bunch of Twitter pages. It's a good idea, but Twitter is the better platform for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I for some reason thought that buying the URL was really important. This is also driven by the fact that my old boss at Street Easy owned URLs in the 90s. So like he used to own Mexico.com and Voodoo.com and his family still owns Tribeca.com. So like I still like think that there's some genius to whoever buys and sells domains, even though now I can't get Gondola.com, probably never will. Don't clip this out. Let them find out that I'm frustrated how much Gondola.com mm-hmm. wants me to buy their URL for.
Who has it?
Venice Beach based gondola boat company, Gondola Adventures. To be honest, they seem to do great. I don't think they're also not holding it. Like I'd be more mad if they were holding it just to make money on it. Like they actually use it. So I'm happy for them.
I'm trying to think. There was a story recently. Some celebrity was trying to buy their at, and it was some like person who had four followers and hasn't tweeted in 5 years. And they were offering like 50 grand and they were just saying, no, it's bad to say the story without really knowing the story, but, it's funny how
it's funny. We We tried to get Gondola on Insta, and we've been running into some roadblocks. We have it on Twitter, but we haven't used it because we want to have the same cross account thing. And we, you know, there's a lot of different ways that companies do their Twitter handle in the absence of using like the word, right? They'll do like a descriptor or something like that. But we put like on Gondola because that's what we want people to be able to use on Twitter. Say like, oh, put this on Gondola. I saw this on Gondola. So whereas like, I think a few months ago, I would have said, I will do anything for Gondola on Instagram. Now I'm just like, on Gondola is great.
How Google became, you know, Google, soon it's going to be on Gondola. They don't, you know?
Yeah.
I got to be honest with you, Jared. I think this is our like 105th episode. And I think this is the first time where we probably have like thrown all of our preparation out the window and just like genuinely shot the shit. Like, I feel like we're literally just like at dinner.
You did prep for this? Am I supposed to prep?
No.
By prep, I looked at your LinkedIn page and took a couple scrolls on your Twitter looking for a bad tweet.
You don't have a Wikipedia page. Why is that?
If you, I don't, wait, do I not have my own Wikipedia? I think I'm listed on Tim Tebow's Wikipedia, but I'm not.
I couldn't find you on Wikipedia.
No, I think I'm just listed as a notable Kleinstein.
You know how hard you made that on us that you don't have a Wikipedia page?
No, I'm here. If you go to Wikipedia for Kleinstein, you see I'm one of the three notable Kleinsteins, which is funny because there's in Israel, there's like a museum of the diaspora. I forget what it's called now, but it's like devoted to Jews outside Israel. And you can like look up the history of your family's names. So we went there in like late 90s, early 2000s, and we looked it up and we looked up Kleinstein. And it's like Kleinstein from the German for small rock. Famous Kleinsteins include the Canadian philanthropist Luba Kleinstein. And mm-hmm. I was like, that's my grandma. Oh my God, she's a famous Canadian philanthropist. So we asked them like, how do you guys pick who's considered a famous Kleinstein? And they said, oh, let's check. That looks like it's manual entry. And we're like, manual entry? And they're like, yeah, it looks like she came here. And when there weren't any famous Kleinsteins listed, she added herself and described herself as a philanthropist. So I know that I'm not the most famous Kleinstein. Rami Kleinstein's like a famous Israeli singer, but I'm cool with it. And I'm sorry that you prepared and I ruined all your prep.
No, it's okay.
Well, we really only interview guests that have Wikipedia pages, so we made a exception for you.
Well, I will get on that. I will find somebody. I'll say, hey, I need to give you $10 to write paragraphs that are reasonably complimentary and nobody will think of as spammy. And like skip my early 20s, just skip it. Just don't talk T-bone. About it.
It's up T-bone.
Well, yeah, but no, that's mid. I think early 20s is more just like when I was at Street Easy, I'm sure that my extracurricular activities were not as formidable.
Right.
You know, New York, man. I may not be a famous Kleinstein, but I am with the Wikipedia page, but they do know I'm born in 1987, which I used to think was young. And now I'm like, damn, I'm old. So
not really.
Okay. What other questions did you have? Hit me with whatever.
We got a lot of brain busters for you. Brett, do you want to go to the social media one?
Sure. I was going to ask you who, and we don't have to get too into it, but is there a company or a person that you think just crushes it on social media, whether it's, you know, how innovative they are, or just how engaging they are? Is there someone that comes to mind? Or a company?
I mean, Will Smith is just like he went from like launching his TikTok account he started Westbrook as like his own media company, which goes from like making his social content and hiring influencers to do it to like producing and making the King Richard movie. I just think he is truly like an icon to me in terms of somebody that saw the forest through the trees and like kind of thinks big picture about content, and that whole family does clearly. Otherwise, like social voice, I just think social voice is hard to do. Like having a good, so like Amy Keene, we talked about, who works for Gondola now, she's got like fantastic social voice. I think that there's some folks like on the team level, like Shabazz Khan, who works for the Timberwolves. He's like the kind of person in the sports world who I really admire how they talk about or how they approach content. And anybody else come to mind? I mean, I really am impressed by like what like Josh Tucker and Ian Trubetta's team at the NFL are doing. I think that if you asked 2 years, like the last few years, the NFL went from like this group led by like David Feldman and a bunch of guys building out this social lab to like make content that's interesting and unique so that it's not just, you know, bone crushing hits and touchdowns. And I think they've done a really great job, and I'm really impressed by like the creativity that they put into their team and content. Also, they structure this LCC program. Are you guys familiar with the NFL like LCC program? They essentially have like league live content correspondents, I think is what it stands for. People that are around the country creating or like shooting content at the game. So they have just like outside of broadcast, they just have this army of really talented people making content for them. So as a brand, like I'm just really impressed by what they pull off.
But, you know, just like obviously, you know, we're kind of getting close on time here, but just to wrap things up, we got one question that we definitely always like to ask our guests. And I feel like you'll have a good response for this. But if you can go back and talk to the 15-year-old version of yourself, what kind of advice would you give to him?
15. It's crazy to say this, like, and this is something I'm really, really, really proud of. If I told my 15-year-old self what I do for a living, he'd be like, no, I don't believe you. No, you don't do that. Yeah. Like I literally played pond hockey for a shoot with Gabe Landeskog last year. That's I've sick. Been on the ice at Ball Arena. I've like shot at Pepsi Center. I've been with like all of my heroes in professional sports. I've somehow found a way to work with. I just think I have a dream job. So I would say like, do what you're doing. I don't think I would change anything in terms of like how I live my life. I'm really happy I didn't smoke weed when I was younger because like I would have messed up college. Like I like didn't work that hard, but I think I would have worked way less hard if I smoked weed. So I'd probably say to my 15-year-old self, like, what was 15?
I know.
I would just say, wear your retainers. I just be like, dude, you just spent all the fucking money on braces. You just got out of it. You're like finally attractive to women. They think you're funny-ish.
You have a nice smile.
Like grow your beard out so people can't see your eyebrows as much as soon as possible, because that was like before I had this, these really stood out. These buttons. So I'd say just do what you're doing. Just like wear your fucking retainers so that like you don't have to get Invisalign in your 20s. That's pretty much. That'd be the biggest piece of advice. And professionally, I wouldn't change a single thing. Every single company I've worked for, I worked with great humans. If I'd worked harder in college, then I probably would have tried to get a job at Bain or like McKinsey or something. And I'm so happy my career path took me exactly where it did. So,
yeah, no, can't beat it. Before we let you go, is there anything you want to plug?
Shoot. Brett, what's your TikTok? I want to plug that.
Brady Buckets, at Brady Buckets.
Okay, follow Brady Buckets. I just want, if anybody's out there that's a creative and you don't need to be somebody that makes content. You could just be the person who does the copywriting. You could be the social analytics person. Check out Gondola, gondola.cc. It's probably I want to think that T-Bone had an impact on the world. I was never, like, clarify, I was never making fun of Christianity. Big fan. As a Jew, people were like, why is a Jew making fun of this? I was like, I was not. T-Bowing had an impact on the world, but I think Gondola can really change how creators are treated, how they're hired, and how they market themselves. Give it a shot. Oh, my baby's here.
Ava's still awake?
Ava's still awake. She just finished bath time.
Gonna go get in the bath.
Oh, she's just starting the bath time?
Yeah.
Hi, guys. Sorry. And I forgot to mention number one thing, I buy real estate. That's all that matters. In the end of the way,
that's like, almost a cheat code, but yeah.
Yeah, no, but so like that's, it's a funny thing, just like small aside.
That wasn't to the 15-year-old self. That was just a plug.
No, that was the, that was,
yeah, that was the 15-year-old self. Okay. He's not plugging to buy real estate.
I know, not a plug, just like advice.
Oh, no, the plug is tell me about your commercial real estate opportunities. So because Fresh Tape, we own our own office and we believe in like owning property. So we own under an entity called Cheesy Baby Properties. That's my daughter's, the Cheesy Baby. It's a story.
Next pod, we'll get into it next time. Next pod.
All I'm plugging is Gondola. Like, I'm so excited to one day look back on the Locker Room podcast and be like, oh my God, we were right. And that's like, I think that'll be awesome.
Yeah. Dude, I mean, we hope to get you back on the podcast when that day comes too. You better not big time us.
Big time you with that Brian Leach. Is that a jersey or is it just like
it's like a banner.
It's like a towel.
But I got Sean Avery right here.
Oh, wow. I hear he's coming back.
He came back for a day and then got cut.
Oh. but no, I hope to as well. I'm excited. I think that one of the coolest things about working in an industry that you love is that, to your point from the beginning about like knowing a lot of different people in the community and how small it is, like how cool is it that in some, like in 5-10 years, like we may be in completely different places. We may be at different companies. We may be on different projects, but we'll still get to shoot the shit about sports. It's kind of a great
way. Always. I mean, I think the coolest thing about this thing too is just like we get to have conversations on a weekly basis with people that are so cool that we kind of just like look up to. And even Brett and I have still never met in person. We do this every week now for about like,
I don't know, if
for about 12 weeks. Yeah.
If Gondola like goes super blows up in the next few months, then y'all can come out to Colorado and I'll fly you guys out to record an episode here. Yeah.
Get me to Ball Arena, to Red Rocks. Yeah. I'm in there.
So my dad's name was Art. He passed away in 2020, but I called him. I'll never forget. The story I was going to tell you guys before the podcast. I didn't want to forget it.
Oh yeah, good call.
I met with the MLB, a bunch of MLB people at a Yankees game, and we just talked about baseball for 3 hours. And I called my dad after. I was like, "Dad, I just had the best meeting of my life, and business school didn't teach me about anything. Like it was you and going to Rockies games and being at home talking about baseball." And he was like, "Well, business school was good too. like, I don't want you to think you went there for no reason." I was like, no, I'm just saying, like, I learned everything about like how to succeed in business from like you and being around people talking about sports. So yeah. I still credit that today.
No, that's awesome. It's so true too. Like I've learned more in the last 2 years than I learned probably my entire life just from conversations with people, you know?
Well, Jared, thanks for coming on. Yeah. You know, you got fans for life over here now, part of the locker room family. I'm excited for people to hear this and hear your journey.
Awesome. I'm excited. And I'm excited for if things go right. And y'all are out here in the next few months. Finally, we'll like I want to film. Yeah. You can't see each other on the plane. I want you to meet in the Denver airport. I want to film like a Love Actually type of moment for you two, like approaching each other. Slow-mo. From the side.
It'd be so awkward.
Slow-mo. Johnny, you jump in my arms, right? I don't jump.
That'd be the cringiest video you probably ever put out.
Hey, good editing. Fresh Tape's got good editors. That's all we need. We like in real life, it's going to look awkward as hell, but we'll make the video look good.
Well, it sounds good. We really appreciate your time. We'll definitely have to have you back on, you know, down the road.
For sure. Thanks, guys. Talk to y'all soon.
We really hope you guys enjoyed that interview with Jared Kleinstein. We had a lot of fun with him. I think we spoke for like a total of 2 hours, but you know, obviously we had to cut it short a little bit just for listening purposes. But we want to thank Jared once again for coming on the show. As always, I want to thank our sponsor, Mindset Wellness CBD. You can go to mindsetwellness.com and use our code LACKA20 for 20% off of your order plus free shipping. That's LACKA, LATKE 20. For 20% off of your order plus free shipping. We love Mindset Wellness CBD. Literally take the common happy gummies almost every day. I talk about it every week. You guys know already. But that's going to wrap it up for this week's episode. We should have another one coming next week. Not sure yet, but stay tuned and we'll have another episode coming soon. Love you guys. Thanks for listening.